Hi. What's up, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts? We're live on Instagram. We're live on YouTube. Right now, we got people here. I normally go live on TikTok, but TikTok banned me for hateful, or no, for harassment and bullying. I was setting up the show, and I was telling people, like, hey, we're going to do the podcast. Welcome to the latest episode of the podcast. And as I was saying that, TikTok was like, you were harassing and bullying someone, and they took away my live privileges. I had just begun talking. Like, the show had just begun. I really hate the internet. Hi, welcome to my podcast. It's me again. It's just me. No guest. How lucky are you? It's just me and you. You don't have to share me with anybody. Okay? It's just me and you. And we're doing great. Let's jump into it. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today it's me, and it's you. And how's everybody doing? And I hope that they're doing well, and I hope that everything's going reasonably okay, or maybe you're feeling the funk that's in the air. I've got the funk. I got the seasonal funk. I got the seasonal depresh. It's hitting me. It's all up on me. It's like every year I forget. Every year I forget that this time of year, this happens. And then when it happens, I'm like, oh no, what's wrong? Something's deeply, deeply wrong. And then I remember, like, no, this happens every year. And I just have to sort of, like, remember that and ride it out. How are you doing? Is everyone okay out there? Are you thriving? Is your year off to a great start? Are you crushing your resolutions and feeling like a million bucks? Or are you a little depressed, like me? A few things to cover before we get into the main topic of the episode. Just a little clarification from last week's episode. So last week we started the episode responding to Megan Murphy's take about why she feels like porn is evil and should be banned, and why the adult industry should be banned. And I was doing a response to that take, and I posted my response thread to Megan Murphy on Instagram, and so I didn't get a whole lot of people responding to what I said on the podcast, but I got a lot of people in the comments of that Instagram thread, which was a repost of a thread I wrote on Twitter, responding in there. And the first thing I want to say is just right off the bat, first of all, and I was just on my friend Niall Breslin's podcast, Brezzy. He goes by professionally Brezzy. He's got a podcast called Where Is My Mind? And he's, if you don't know him, he's this very tall, handsome, successful, smart Irishman who's here in Los Angeles for the next month doing some stuff. And so I popped over to this place that he's staying at and did his podcast. And we talked about mindfulness in sociopolitical discourse. And he was asking me about like why is Twitter so problematic? And like, Is Twitter going to be the harbinger of the downfall of modern civilization and all this stuff? And we were talking about how it's really, really hard to get nuance in any kind of discussion point being made on the internet in general, on any of the major platforms, except for maybe YouTube, but like on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, it's very hard to get nuance. On TikTok, I feel like I can flesh out an idea a little bit better in 2 to 3 minutes. I make long TikToks. A lot of people who just are interested in going viral, their TikToks are like 6 to 15 seconds, and that works for them. And that's not time enough to make a good point about something, but it is time enough to like get a joke off and have a video that people can watch over and over again that's very shareable, that people can put on their Instagram stories really easily. But when I'm trying to talk about something that is happening in the sociopolitical discourse, that's happening in the zeitgeist, something that I want to have a hot take on, I'm going to need at least 2 to 3 minutes. Sometimes I need to do a two-parter of like two and a half minute long or 2 3-minute long videos amounting to 6 total minutes, if you can believe it. And of course, even in 2 to 3 minutes long or 5 minutes or 6 minutes of time in a video, I'm only going to be able to barely scratched the surface of all of the topics I could cover under the umbrella of that topic. There's something that in video content creation, there's something that I talk about all the time that I have to avoid called tempting tangential territory. And this is just like when you're talking about a thing and you use a certain phrase and you have the thought, oh, that phrase could be misinterpreted to mean something else. I better take a little beat here to say, and when I use that phrase, I mean specifically this thing, not this thing. And I'm using it in a way to talk about this connotative contextualization of the phrase, not this connotative contextualization of the phrase. But once you do that, you've already used up like 30 seconds of valuable real estate in a 2 to 3 minute long video. Like, you're trying to hold people's attention on an app meant for next thing, next thing, next thing. And you've got to be economical with your time. And if you get lost in the weeds on tempting tangential territory, you'll lose the thread of your point. So in a single TikTok video, it usually is just wise from just a standpoint of wanting to get clarity in your point to try to stick as much as possible to the primary topic of the video. So if there's one point I'm trying to make or one primary point I'm trying to make, I have to sort of avoid all of the tangential territory. But in doing that, invariably and unavoidably, there are always people in the comments of that video saying, well, what about this? Or how come you didn't talk about this? Or you forgot about this? And it's not that I forgot about those things, or it's not that I wasn't aware of those things. I might even say something in the video to the effect of like, there's so much more to be said on this topic when it comes to this, but right now I'm just focusing on this. I might even say that. And in that phrase right there, there's so much more to be said when it comes to this. That encapsulates all the extra stuff that people watch and they go, how come you didn't say this? It's like, well, I didn't not say it. I acknowledge that that also exists, but that's a whole other topic for a whole other video. And one of the reasons I like doing the podcast is because I get the chance to flesh things out a little bit more. Going back to what I was talking about with Brezzy, is like, it's really, really hard in 2 to 3 minutes on TikTok to flesh out anything other than whatever the primary point of that video is. So there's going to be all this extra stuff that goes into that topic that won't make it into the video. And people are going to think that somehow that invalidates the points that were made in that video or makes that video incorrect somehow. And it's even worse on Twitter. On Twitter, everything's gotten boiled down even more to the point where, like, there's just no room in a single tweet for any nuance with any take. So you have to boil down your take to just the rawest form. And that's why things get so sloganized and things just become kind of like dunking and insults. And Twitter's more about, like, how quippy and clever can you be? How witty can you be with your retort on someone? It's really a place that is devoid of nuance. And if you want to try to inject any kind of nuance into the point that you're making or the thing that you're trying to say, you have to write a thread. And even with a thread, you have to be careful because people will only abide threads that are like 6, 7, 8 max tweets long. Like, any longer than that, if you're 9, 10, 11, 12 tweets deep in a thread, most people will have abandoned it by then. Most people will have said, this is too long, I'm not going to read all of this. TLDR, homie. Sayonara. And like, even that, even 6 to 8 tweets on a thing is not a lot. If you actually took all of that and put it into a Word document, it would amount to like half a page. It's like half a page to elucidate an idea, to elucidate a position on a certain topic. And so I was responding to Megan Murphy, who was saying that porn should be banned, and I was doing it in the same format that she did it. She wrote a Twitter thread, and I was responding to her Twitter thread and to specific points that she made in her Twitter thread. She had a longer, more fleshed out position in her Substack and in the comments, but again, I'm trying to like zero in and be really clear about what my position is, because specifically what I was responding to is the idea that we should ban porn, that we should ban that aspect of sex work and the adult film industry, that we should just make it illegal and get rid of it. And I was really specific in my tweet. I said, This is not a, I'm not taking a position here where I'm saying there's nothing wrong with porn. Porn's the best. Rock on. And anyone who has a problem with porn is just a prude who's outdated and out of touch. I was really specific to say that, that like there are very real issues in this industry, very real concerns with abuse, manipulation, coercion, exploitation. Those things absolutely exist, and I'm not making this position to say that they don't or to ignore those things. But that's a whole separate conversation, too. We can talk about the abuse and the manipulation and the exploitation that exists in this industry in a separate conversation or on a separate thread. This thread is responding to the position that we should ban the industry because of those things. And my position is, no, you should not ban the industry. That is not a solution. Simply just doing a blanket ban of the industry doesn't fix any of those problems. And also, those are problems that exist in every other industry in the world. Every single industry in the world has those problems, has the problem of abuse, manipulation, coercion, exploitation, all of that stuff. And it's not a solution to just say, well, the problem clearly is the industry itself. And if we get rid of the industry, we will ipso facto get rid of manipulation and abuse and coercion and all of this stuff. Sex work is going to exist whether it's legal or not. People are going to engage in this work whether it's legal or not. My position was more about coming to the defense of sex workers and saying we should not vilify these people and demonize these people and make their work illegal, because it's going to happen whether it's legal or not. Making it legal and making it more societally acceptable and normalized just increases our ability to make it safer. That's all I was saying. And Megan had made a bunch of points on her thread about how people who support this industry don't care about the well-being of the performers. They don't see the performers as human. She was really kind of like talking about like one specific kind of porn and one specific kind of person who consumes porn. A kind of porn that absolutely exists and a kind of consumer of it that absolutely exists. The problematic videos with, sexual assault fantasy and people who consume that kind of stuff and who are interested in a very unrealistic and heightened and male dominated and like almost violent form that absolutely exists in there. But there's a type of porn for everything, for every kind of person. So it's just as diverse of an industry as anything else is, as humanity is. Like, there is a kind of porn, there's a genre of the adult film industry for everyone. And she was kind of zeroing in on like the most problematic aspects of it, the most problematic kinds and the most problematic consumers. And I was at no point saying that those things don't exist or that those things aren't problematic. And I was clear about that in my thread, but I didn't like go into specific detail. I didn't go like, these things all exist in porn, like this, and this exist, and they are problematic for these reasons, and they should be addressed in this way. That's a whole, it just, you see how it's like tempting tangential territory, and in a Twitter thread, I only have the time to try to make my point as to why I think banning it is not a solution. And I was responding to her idea that people who consume it or defend it don't care about performers. And I was saying, I actually happen to be friends with a lot of performers and a lot of filmmakers in that industry. I'm friends with a lot of people who dance at strip clubs. I'm friends with a lot of people who make content on OnlyFans and things like that. And I know these people personally, and I don't not care about them. I actually care about them quite a lot. And I happen to know a bit about their state of well-being. And I was just sort of like going to bat for them. And so there were a lot of people in the comments on my Instagram thread who were basically saying something to the effect of like, you're totally ignoring all of the very real problems that exist in this industry. And I wasn't at all. In the thread, I said, this thread does not exist to say that very real problems don't exist. This thread just exists to say that I don't believe that banning the industry is a solution. That's the position I was focusing on in that post. And so many people, even though I said that, were like, but you didn't say it specifically enough. So we're just going to go to the place of you didn't say it at all. You're fully ignoring it and denying it and or minimizing it. And that's not what I did. But again, this is the thing I was talking to my buddy Brezzy about, is like, nuance is really, really hard to flesh out. on the internet. It's hard to flesh out in a 2 to 3 minute long video on TikTok, and it's really hard to flesh out on Twitter. It's like damn near impossible. Because again, even if I had decided to write a 15 to 20 tweet long thread, someone still could have combed through that and been like, but you didn't mention this. How come you didn't mention this, Austin? There's always going to be some aspect of the conversation that gets left out. Always. Even on a podcast, one of the reasons I love doing a podcast is it gives me an opportunity to flesh out these ideas more. But even talking about an idea like this for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, I could do three full episodes with different people coming in and offering different points of view and expertise, and we would still have more to discuss. There would still be more layers to peel back and more to unravel and more to get into. So that's the first thing I wanted to respond to, is everyone who was saying you're really kind of being dismissive or minimizing or fully ignoring the fact that real problems exist in this industry. No, I wasn't. And I think you're being intellectually dishonest when you say that, because it is even in the nuance lacking thread that I wrote. The language is there to acknowledge that stuff. And also, I think that you're lacking intellectual honesty, because I did a whole podcast talking about it, the whole first half of my podcast last week, and that post that I made on Instagram said you can listen to the podcast for more detail on the discussion. And then I spent like the better part of an entire day responding to people, clarifying what had already been clarified in the tweet, but clarifying it in more words. And I just sometimes I think people see an opportunity to like catch you slipping, and even if they can see that you've done what's necessary to address what you needed to address, if you don't do it in the right way or with the right verbiage, they'll be a little intellectually dishonest and pounce anyway and pretend like you said something you didn't say. But there were a few points that people brought up that I thought were important distinctions that I missed in the podcast last week and in the post. One thing that someone brought up is they said, well, this isn't exactly the same as other industries where, you know, the same exact problems exist and the same exact repercussions exist and fallout exists. The fallout for people who work in this industry tends to be more severe than the fallout for people who work in other industries. So someone might experience exploitation, manipulation, coercion, abuse working at McDonald's, but they're not going to be barred from working in other fields after they leave McDonald's. They're not going to leave the job and say, I'm getting away from this abuse and I'm getting away from this abusive environment and go apply for a job somewhere else and have someone go, oh, you worked at McDonald's? Yeah, no, we're not going to employ you here. We don't employ people who worked at McDonald's. Or say that like you can't work with kids anymore because you worked at McDonald's. Like, so there are real repercussions for sex workers and people who work in the adult industry, where once they've worked in that industry, sometimes it can be very hard to find work other places. And again, I would look at a problem like that and say, that has so much more to do with society's sex negativity and society's stigmatization of this work than it does with the work itself being problematic or bad. And a lot of the comments that I was getting from people that were like, well, this is more pronounced in this industry than it is in other industries, or this is more prevalent in this industry than it is in other industries, were issues like that that are more the result of society's sex negative stigmatization of sex work than they are a result of sex work itself being bad. So I kept seeing that theme over and over again, that like people were demonizing the work itself or blaming the work itself, the idea of using your own bodily autonomy and agency as an adult to decide to go into that work, that idea itself, that concept itself, the concept of sex work itself, demonizing that and blaming that for a lot of the problems that arise or that come out of that industry. Just blaming the idea of like there being an industry for that at all for the problems that are seen in that industry, rather than blaming the fact that like our society at large and in general has a very troubled relationship with sex. And this is not just in the adult industry, and it's not just the thing that began after porn began, after people started making, you know, nudie magazines and started making dirty videos, our society has always had, and for most of modern civilization, has had a problematic and troubling and unhealthy relationship with sex. And again, that's a whole other conversation. I think I could do an entire podcast, and I want to, and I've wanted to for years. I want to do an entire podcast where I have a sex worker on the show to talk to me about their job and what it is that they do and actually give a firsthand account of it. I want to have some of my friends that work in the adult film industry on to talk about their job and talk about the specifics of that. I would love to have like a sex therapist or a sex researcher on the podcast just to talk about human sexuality and sex in general and our relationship with it and why our relationship is so problematic with it and why it's so fucked up and why there's so much violence that we see with it. But all of those things are like entire other topics that you could do an entire like doctoral analysis on. You could study that shit and get your PhD in it. And so when I'm making a point about how like I don't think a solution to these problems is to ban the industry, and people are like, but don't you think that sexual violence is a problem? It's like, well, of course I do. But that's an entire other topic, because sexual violence is not a problem because porn exists. That could be something that feeds into it in certain situations. But again, this is a multifaceted, like multidimensional, complex topic. And you are not going to solve the problem of sexual violence and our problematic relationship with sex by banning porn or banning sex work. You are not going to like eliminate that problem. Not by a long shot. It's a much more complex and multifaceted issue surrounding societal sex negativity stemming from power structures that are heavily influenced by religions and the way that religion gets people to be obedient and manufactures obedience. And it's also just good old-fashioned misogyny and the way that the power structure was framed with a misogynistic lens and with a patriarchal lens to strip people of all of their autonomy and control, but give men the illusion of control over women and children. And so men enact this one sliver of control that they are given by this problematic power structure that men created to give men power, and they enact this delusion of control in these like really unhealthy and violent ways. And that's a very multifaceted conversation about human psychology and the structure of infrastructural power structures and like institutional power and how that has informed our societal and special relationship to sex over generations. It's so much more complex than just porn bad. And that's really kind of like the core of what I was saying with that Twitter thread. But again, nuance is very, very hard to flesh out in a Twitter thread. It's very hard to flesh out in a 2 to 3 minute long video. It's hard right now for me with a podcast, with extra time where I can just talk. It's hard to fully flesh out. And I'm just trying to point out that like, I at no point was trying to minimize or deny the very real problems that exist in the adult industry. There are problems that exist, by the way, in every industry. And I believe that they're problems that should be addressed and talked about and worked on. I was just trying to say, I know people who work in this industry who are doing their best to work in ethical ways in this industry. And I don't believe that demonizing these people or vilifying these people is the answer or the solution to the problem of society's troubling relationship to sex and sexuality. One other point that someone made is that while manipulation, abuse, coercion, and exploitation, it may exist in many industries, certain forms of violence, like sexual violence, might be more prevalent in that industry. And I could see making an argument for that, but I would also again say that like sexual violence exists in society and in every industry. It just is there. And I think that making a correlation, establishing a causation based off of a correlation, saying this thing exists in this industry, therefore this industry causes this thing, that's just a kind of a basic, simple, logical fallacy of correlation does not equal causation. This thing exists everywhere. It is a societal problem. It is a foundational institutional problem in our special psyche that needs to be addressed. And it is not as simple as get rid of this one thing and we should be good. So hopefully that adds another layer of nuance. Like I said, I could do two or three or four more podcasts on this thing and still not really scratch the surface. But hopefully that adds another layer of understanding, another layer of nuance to something that I felt like was not getting its fair shake at nuance on Instagram and maybe on Twitter too. In fact, people responded much more favorably on Twitter than they did on Instagram. Instagram is where it got hairy. People got, I thought people were getting really, intellectually dishonest and like putting words in my mouth that I wasn't saying and kind of like getting a little ahead of themselves on the argument and starting to be like, you don't care about victims. You don't care about the real pain that people have endured. And I'm like, where did I say that? One person said that I don't care about consent. I was like, huh? That was my whole position, is that like people are adults who should be able to consent to what they want to do for work. That if an adult decides that they want to go into a certain line of work, they should have the ability to do that. As long as they are not being coerced or manipulated into making that choice. And I thought I said that pretty clearly, but yeah, anyway, hopefully that adds another dimension. Let's get back to the main topic here, which I brought up at the beginning of the show, which is, like, how you feeling? How you doing? How's everybody doing out there? I've been sad, man. I think part of it is I just got off the music video. I directed this music video for my friend Tiffany Topol out in Salt Lake, and it was great and it was awesome. And I do have a tendency to sometimes experience a hangover after really intense, really great, really like inspiring creative projects. If I have a creative project with someone that goes really well or that's really inspiring and really stimulating, there can be a little hangover when that thing ends. And I think I'm experiencing a little bit of that. Also, just like the new year, this whole stretch of time is rough. And it's rough for me every year, but every time I'm single during this stretch, it's particularly rough. I talked to Colin Stanley about this a little bit. It feels like from Thanksgiving to Valentine's, there's like this 3-ish month long stretch where all the holidays and all the focus societally is on like, are you coupled up? Do you have people? Are you going over to your partner's home for Thanksgiving? Are you dining with your partner's family and then going to back to your family? Or, you know, like, do you have people? Do you have a solid family? Do you have a solid enough relationship with your family that you can have a good Thanksgiving? And then you go to Christmas and it's like, what are you and your partner doing for Christmas? Are you getting each other things? And then it's like New Year's Eve and it's like, who's your kiss at midnight? Are you going out and getting a kiss for midnight? Do you have a kiss or are you a loser without a kiss? And then it's like, how was the end of your year? Did you do all the things that you wanted to do at the beginning of the year? Now you're being reminded that last year you said you were going to do a bunch of things. Did you do those things? And now do you want to make some new goals this year because you didn't accomplish your goals last year? And there's all that shit. And then it goes all the way through Valentine's Day, which is the worst one of them all. It's like, can we just be done? Can we just knock it off? Are we done yet? With the near constant things for people who have love in their lives, and this stretch of time is even hard for me when I'm coupled up, just because seasonally it's hard. But I don't know. I've been feeling a little overwhelmed, feeling a little sad, feeling like just a lack of energy, a lack of inspiration. I definitely am just like, I'm just like tired over on TikTok and making content and stuff. I'm just tired, dude. And I think people are feeling it. People in the comments are a little bit lately are like, are you okay? I'm just feeling like a weird energy off you. And I'm like, no, I'm not okay. I'll be okay. It's fine. But like it'll come back. This happens, you know, this happens to me every year. And like I said, I just did have an amazing project that went really, really well, that was really exciting. And sometimes after stuff like that, you just feel like, okay, well, what next now? And you feel like in the wake of that, you're just sitting around doing nothing, and you should be out there finding more inspiring and exciting projects. But the bottom line is, like, I've been in it, and I've been allowing myself to be in it, which I think is important. I want to make that really clear, that when you find yourself feeling these feelings, it's important to just acknowledge it for what it is and just go, oh, I'm a little sad right now, a little depressed right now, little lacking in energy or motivation right now, a little uninspired. And that's okay to name it, to feel it, to acknowledge it. I think that's important. And I've been doing that, but I also think what's important is, and this is the part where I'm like, I really want to make sure that everything I say from here on out on the podcast, it's clear that I'm relaying my own experience with this stuff. I'm talking about my own experience, and I am not saying anything I'm saying as a commentary on your experience. Your experience is your own, and there's a good chance that your experience differs from mine. You might hear a lot of what I'm saying and go, no, I relate to a lot of this. A lot of this sounds really familiar. And you might hear half of what I'm saying and go, half of that's familiar and half of that I don't think he really understands. And you might be listening to me and going, you have no idea what you're talking out your ass, Austin. This is not what depression is like for me at all. And you might not relate. I am speaking about my own experience and talking about how it feels for me and what helps for me. I know that for me, listening to people talk about what might help and having people give me suggestions on what I could be doing to maybe pull myself out of it sometimes is like really hard to hear for me. I know that in my experience, like when I'm sad, when I'm depressed, the last thing I want to do is anything that will make me feel better. And that's sort of the rub. That's the bitch of it for me, is just that, like, for whatever reason, the way that my depression manifests and makes itself known in my life is it makes me not want to do any of the things, any single thing that might help me feel better. It wants me to lean into all of the things that will keep me feeling bad. So what my depression wants me to do is like sleep in late, not get out of bed, and it says it in like a nice voice. It's not mean. That depression kitty from Big Mouth, if you've ever seen that show, or Internal Affairs, whatever. What is it? What's the show? What's the other show called? Human Relations, maybe the spinoff of Big Mouth, but they have this depression kitty, and that's really accurate for me because it's like really nice to me. It's like, oh, you know what you should do? You don't have anything early in the morning tomorrow. You should like sleep in. First of all, stay up late. Stay up late and watch as much Better Call Saul as you want, okay? You need to catch up. Everyone's saying that this show is great. Binge, baby, binge, and snack, and go to bed at like 3 a.m. Who cares? You don't have to be up for anything tomorrow. If you're out of bed by noon tomorrow, it'll be fine. And this is what my depression wants me to do. And it's like, and I do it. I'm like, you know what? You're right. You're right. That sounds great. It's not. It's like terrible. It's never like, I'm glad I did that. That was awesome. It just keeps the process of getting more and more depressed going more and more subtly. And it's subtle. It just ratchets up a little bit at a time. And before you know it, you're in a bad place where you're kind of reeling and you're wondering, how did I get here? And it's because that little tempting depression kitty, and again, just speaking for myself here, is so tempting and so cute and nice and seemingly there for you, being like, hey, today, skip the yoga in the morning. You did yoga the last 3 days. That was so good of you. You were so good. I'm so proud of you. Just skip it today. It's okay. You're fine. Like, you're totally fine. And the reality is like, no, that was helping you feel better. It's really, really convincing. And so I get it. The last thing I want to hear from people when I tell them that I'm kind of depressed too is like, oh, you know what you should do is exercise. Fuck off with that. Would someone tell, oh, you should just exercise more? Yeah. You think? You mean my least favorite thing? Yeah, I know. I will do any of the things that can make me feel better. Just drinking some water. Maybe I just need to drink more water. Drinking some water. You know, I will do any of the things before I consider, like, going on a run. Ugh! Going to the gym. No! Oh, it's my least favorite thing in the world. And it's maybe the thing that if I were able to do it, would actually change my situation. And I feel the most resistance to it, where my body and my soul and my brain are like, no, absolutely not. Anything else. And I'll just like call yoga exercise if I get my heart rate up. If I have to do some poses that day that are a little hard for me and that get me breathing hard, then I'm like, I did it. I like to take walks. I'll take a little walk and be like, I did it. But like, boy, actual exercise, actual sweat and bullets exercise. Ooh, I'll do everything on the list before that one. Exercise and changing the way I eat. Actually trying to like craft my diet to make myself feel better, make my mental health feel better. Oh, fuck off. Because again, my depression is like, no, what you need is half-baked. You need a pint of half-baked from the store. Remember how delicious that was the last time you ate one? And I'm like, I do remember that. It's so good. And I go and get it and I eat it. And by the time I'm done, I'm like, well, I don't feel that great, to be honest. I did like it. It tasted good. But I don't feel like energized or better. Now I just feel like taking a little depression nap. Anyway, this is just sort of my experience lately is I've been very uninspired. I've been very sort of just thinking like, what am I doing? What am I doing with my life? What am I doing with my art? Is it working still? Is it dying? Is my creativity, am I losing it? Am I staying on top of things that I need to stay up on top of professionally, personally, spiritually? And I don't think I am with like anything. And that just deepens my feeling of despair. And I just want to be clear that like I relate to the feeling of not wanting to be told to like get it together or how I could get it together. That when someone's like, you need to do this or that, I'm like, I know. I'm going to be 35 on Tuesday. It's my birthday on Tuesday. I know what I'm supposed to be doing and what I should be doing. I'm consciously not doing those things because that's how my depression manifests in my life. But I will say this. At some point, okay? So what I'm doing here is I'm trying to set up a relatable feeling, hopefully for some people, and trying to let you know like I am feeling bad and I have been feeling bad, trying to qualify that for you. And I'm also trying to set up that I think it's important to honor feelings as they come up and to honor and acknowledge states of being as they come up and let them flow through you. I think that's important to not repress them or push them away. But now what I want to talk about, the third thing that I think is really important is at some point though, you gotta find something, some way to get up and move through that. Because stewing there and sitting there and languishing in it. And I get it. It's so hard. It's so hard not to. But the more that you don't, the more that you don't get up, the more that you don't find some way to keep pushing forward, the harder it gets. But sitting there and letting it get worse has real world consequences. And they're consequences that are really kind of unacceptable. And there are some that are very extreme that you're probably aware of, self-harm and things like that. There are very serious consequences that can come from that. If you sit in that space enough of not doing anything to honor yourself and to try to give yourself a shot at feeling better, there are very, very dire and severe consequences that can occur. But then there's other kind of consequences that, like, I'm going to tell you a story right now about something that happened to me last night. And I want you to know at the beginning of the story that I am profoundly embarrassed and humiliated and ashamed of this story. I'm not proud of what happened, and I'm not happy with how I behaved. So here I am in my depresso cabin, my apartment, being depressed. And last night I was working on a song, which helps me. You know, I was working on something creative and feeling a little bit better. And I remembered I had got tickets for a movie. I got tickets for Sarah Polley's movie, Women Talking, at 10 p.m. And it was like 9:45. And I was like, oh yeah, I have movie tickets. So I headed out the door and I went to the movie theater and I showed up like right after 10:03, 10:04, just enough time to like get my concessions and go in there as the credits are wrapping, or the previews are wrapping up, just in time for the movie to start. And I walk up to the door, and I'm a member of AMC Stubbs A-List. $25 a month, 3 movies a week. It's a great deal. Movies are like $18 a piece out here in LA, and so it's a steal. 25 a month, and you get to go see 3 movies a week. I usually see at least one movie a week, so I see like 4 movies a month, sometimes more. But I go to the movies a lot because I really like going to the movies, and it's a thing that makes me feel good. I like going and getting lost in a story. But I show up and I show my little app with my QR code to the girl at the door to get in, and she scans it and she goes, "Oh no, you bought tickets for another theater that's on the other side of town." And she's like, "Oh, you got tickets for the wrong theater." And I go, "Oh my gosh, I'm so stupid. I'm so sorry." And she goes, "No, it's okay. We have this same movie playing at the same time. Just go over to the box office over there, tell them what happened, and they'll just exchange it over to this movie." And I thought, oh yeah, piece of cake. And I've done this before with my membership. It's not a hard thing. They just cancel the order that you made for the other theater, and they just ring up a new one for that theater. So I go over, I hand this guy my phone, I tell him what happened. And he's like a 17-year-old kid who's working a minimum wage job, maybe a little bit more, at a movie theater, you know? The kind of job that you would have at that age. And I sit there for about 3 to 5 minutes while he just scans my code over and over again and keeps typing things into his computer, and then scans the code again, types things into his computer. And I'm aware of the time passing that, like, okay, the movie has begun. I would like to get some, but I'm like, okay. And after like the fourth or fifth time that he scans my thing and he types something in, I go, "How come you keep scanning the thing?" And he goes, "Well, it's not scanning." And I go, "Oh, well, okay. So it hasn't been scanning this whole time?" And he goes, "Yeah, it's just not scanning." And I go, "Okay. Is there something else that you can try? Can you try like entering in my member number or something, or like my name? Can we just hurry this along?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, I guess I'll try to enter that in." And he holds the phone up, and one number at a time, very slowly, is like, you know, poking in one number of my member number at a time. And he hits enter and he goes, "Oh geez, I entered it wrong." And he has to go back and enter the whole thing. And I'm sitting here and I'm feeling my impatience rising. And I'm like watching this kid like very slowly doing this thing that should be relatively quick. Cancel the order, bring up the movie for this theater, get me a ticket for this theater, bada bing, bada boom. It's been like 5-6 minutes now at this point. So he finally rings the number incorrectly, and he goes to the thing and he goes, "Oh, geez, you know what? I don't think I can do an exchange for you because the movie's already started. And once it's already started, I don't think we can do an exchange from theater to theater." And this is where I get really, really ashamed, you guys. And I'm so embarrassed that I'm about to tell you that this happened. And I did. It was sort of an out-of-body experience. And this really, for me, this is for me the consequence of not being more proactive about my depression and not being more proactive about where I'm at mentally. And, you know, 'cause what I've been doing for like the last week is acknowledging that I'm a little depressed, but not doing anything about it. And so he says, I don't think I can do this exchange. And before I even can make a choice of how to respond to this, my mouth says the words, are you fucking kidding me? I said that to a 17-year-old kid. I don't know if he's 17. He looked like he was 17. Working in a movie theater who looked like he was new and didn't really know the system. And I said, are you fucking kidding me? And he went, I'm so sorry. Let's, and he got on his microphone. He said, can a manager come and help me? And I went, why is this so hard? This shouldn't be so hard. Just I had it for the wrong theater, cancel it for that theater and put me in the new theater. The manager comes over and already I'm like, there's a person waiting. There's like two people in line behind me who are waiting and they heard me say that. And I'm like, I'm an angry, entitled, white son of a bitch. I'm that guy right now at a movie theater yelling at a minimum wage employee who just is like in over his head and it's fine. And it's just a stupid movie ticket. It's just a stupid movie ticket, but it's too late. I've already done it. I've already said these mean things and I'm like, I'm already just like in this state and the manager's trying to help and she's trying to do stuff. And it's like 10:15 now, you know, like the movie's about to start. And I just go, you know what, guys, I'm going to go home. It's fine. I'm going to go home. And I grab my phone and the manager goes, no, we're almost done, sir. We're almost done. I'm just going to get you a coupon for the movie. And I go, okay. And then so they ring it up and they go, so that's $17.99. And I go, no, it's not $17.99. It's free. I pay for this every month. And she goes, okay, yeah. Okay. Here, we'll use this coupon. We'll scan this. And we're just going to write down the information of this order that we're canceling. And then you'll be in the movie. And there's all these people watching this happen. And I'm just like so embarrassed and disappointed in myself and surprised at myself that like, that person is in there that so easily I just was so callous and rude to these people who really were just like trying their best. And I couldn't even really focus on the movie. By the way, it was interesting. I went in, the movie's Women Talking by Sarah Polley. It's a very feminist movie if you haven't seen it. And I walked into the theater and it was me and two other guys. It was just three single men sitting watching Women Talking. It was very interesting. A movie about like the evils of men and how men are like these scary, dangerous sex monsters. And it was just three men watching this movie. But I had a hard time focusing on it and enjoying it because I was just so, the whole movie I kept thinking like, I got to go out there and apologize to those people. I got to go out there and say, I'm so sorry. That was so inappropriate and you guys didn't do anything wrong. And I left the theater and I was so embarrassed that I just left and I didn't apologize. And I've been thinking about it all day long. And really the bottom line is like, that's unacceptable behavior. That's not okay. I don't get to do that just because like, I'm not feeling great, you know? That's unacceptable. And I don't get a pass because I'm a little sad right now. That kid doesn't know that. And he doesn't deserve what he got because I wasn't taking care of my mental health. Because I wasn't being proactive about my mental health. I was doing the part where I acknowledge and honor the feelings and saying, hey, here they are. And I know that they're temporary and I know that they're impermanent and I know that they come every year and they're going to be gone. I was doing that part. But I wasn't doing the part where I acknowledge and honor the feelings, but then do what I need to do to process and work through them. And the reality of why I need to process and work through them isn't just because it'll make me feel better and I don't like feeling sad, but it's because it affects the way that I am in the world. It affects the way that I interact with people. It changes the kind of person that I am when I'm interacting with people. It turns me into a person that is unacceptable, that behaves in a way that is truly abhorrent and shameful. And I have to protect myself and other people from that energy. I deserve to feel better, and that person deserves a healthier interaction, a more normal human interaction. I'm glad I'm in a space where I can see it and acknowledge it, but I just wanted to share that story as a way to sort of say, and there's a lot of people in the comments right now being very gracious and saying, like, you're only human, you made a mistake. And yeah, that's true too. And that's a whole conversation that we could have about, you know, there's a whole podcast we could do and a whole conversation we could have about the way that we treat people in society when they make mistakes and when they mess up and when they behave in ways that aren't them at their best, you know, that we need to be better about granting people grace and granting people space to grow and space to learn. And that we need to be better about recognizing that we all have bad days. And again, not saying that to excuse bad behavior. I still have to be accountable for that behavior, and no one can fix that behavior but me. And so today it was pretty clear that, like, something had to be done. And this is where I'm finally getting to the point of the episode. The whole thing's been talking about the point of the episode, but the point of the episode was to talk a little bit about, like, things that you can do to begin the process of pulling yourself out of a depressive funk. Because like I said, the last thing I want to do when I'm depressed is anything to make myself feel better. And some things are bigger than others and way more. Like, I really, really, really don't want to go to the gym and, like, get my sweat on and have a really rigorous exercise. So maybe that's too big to start out with. And maybe your thing is something else. Maybe there's something that you really know will actually have, like, a real impact on you, but you're like, I don't have the energy for that yet. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, like, where you might be able to start and where I start and what things help me just to begin to get back into a positive swing. And it's always just, like, simple things. It's just the same old simple things all the time. And today, what it was for me was something as simple as a to-do list, which I'm not coming up with anything novel here. I'm not stating an idea that like you haven't heard a million times before. And I know how annoying that can be to be like, oh, shut up, a to-do list, really? But that's what it was for me today. I was a little overwhelmed with all of the different places I could start. I kept thinking, like, okay, I just need to start with something. Maybe it's cleaning my apartment. Maybe it's responding to that email I haven't responded to yet. Maybe it's filing that paperwork that I haven't filed for that thing yet. Maybe it's taking my car to get the oil changed. Maybe it's going to the grocery store to get that thing that I need at the grocery store. And I'm a little overwhelmed by the amount of places I could start, by the amount of achievable tasks within my grasp that I could start with. So I do a tried and true thing, which is, let me just put them in a list and just work my way through the list. And wouldn't you know it, one of the things on the list was record an episode of the podcast. So here we are, recording an episode of the podcast. There's 30 seconds remaining on Instagram, by the way. I'm going to restart after this one ends. Just so you know, Instagram, you can come back. I'm going to restart that live once this ends in like 15 seconds. But yeah, you know, so I started, and one of the things was do an episode of the podcast. So I've worked my way through my list, and now I'm here, and I'm talking to you about how I've begun again today to try to pull myself up out of this this funk. I'm going to restart the live on Instagram over here. It's starting up again. And Patrick Kennedy says, or come over to YouTube, Instagram. I agree. I love that Patrick Kennedy always watches videos on YouTube and comments on things on YouTube. BeckBeck295 on YouTube says, a full spectrum 10,000 lumen light lamp every morning in the winter while I drink my coffee helps me. This is good. I do want to hear about what things you employ that help you. So that's what helped me today, was a to-do list. And sometimes it's something as simple as taking a walk. Like I said earlier, drink more water. Something simple, but maybe if there's too many places that I don't know where to start, a simple to-do list is a good place for me to start. Just the simplicity of saying, write them all down and start checking things off. So one of them was to clean my apartment. I did that. One of them was to get my oil changed. I did that, baby. One of them was to go to the store and get a few items that I needed. Got them. One of them was to respond to these emails that I needed to respond to. Did it. One of them was to hit up one of my work contacts to check in on some payments that hasn't come through yet. Did that. One of them was to finish working on this song that I had started earlier today. Did that. Finished writing it. I'm going to work on recording it after I'm done with this. And one of them was to record a podcast. And here we are. So there is a list of things that I made for myself to accomplish today that I accomplished. I feel good. Another good one that I really like that's like a magic trick that I didn't use today that I wish I would have used, that's another one of those things that's hard for me to use but is very effective when I can do it, is calling someone. And not calling someone to vent to them the way I kind of have been to all of you on this podcast so far, but calling someone to ask them how they're doing. Ooh, boy, when I can find the strength to do this one, it is so, so, so useful for me. When I can find the willingness to, and usually it's good to take a walk or take a drive or something, but calling people and asking them what's going on in their life and what's happening with them and getting outside of myself for a little bit, for 20, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, trying to be of service to someone in a very simple way by just letting them know I was thinking of them and I care about them and I care about what's happening in their life. Responding to people's texts, like just simple ways to let people know that you care about them. That is really, really, really useful for me. And again, it's not calling them to say, hey, I need you to listen to me talk about what's going on wrong in my life. And that's why it's really hard, is because what I want to do is call some people and say, can I just sort of tell you about how I'm feeling right now? What I need to do, what's really, really helpful for me, what's really transformational for me, is calling people and saying, how are you doing? How are things going in your life right now? But depression wants to keep me stuck in my own experience, stuck in my own story, stuck in my own little self-centered spiral. Patrick Kennedy on YouTube says, I haven't found to-do lists helpful most of the time, but when I make them work, I feel bigger than life, and you're inspiring me. I know what you mean, because a to-do list is not a thing that I regularly go to. It is hard for me. I most of the time like to operate without a to-do list. Most of the time I like to just be like, I don't need, like the to-do list to me feels like training wheels, or it feels like hand-holding. It feels like I'm not giving myself credit. Like I have to like write everything down and then check it off as I do it. And it feels like I'm infantilizing myself, and I'm like, I don't need to write everything down. I know what needs to be done. I just need to buckle down and do it. And when I'm capable of actually doing it, and I kind of have to be forced into it by like something like what happened last night. I have to be like really sort of beaten into submission by my depression to go, okay, fine, I'll make the stupid list. And then I make the list, and accomplishing the list does make me feel, as Patrick said, bigger than life. And I wish I could just do it every day, but I'm sort of one of those people that like has to do things the hard way all the time for some reason. Yenny Julius on Instagram says, sometimes my to-do list becomes so long, I get overwhelmed, then shut down. Totally. I was writing my list today, and it was getting kind of long, and I had to tell myself, that's enough. That's enough items. And there are more things that should be on the list that did not get done today. But that's a good thing to remember, too, is making a to-do list. Try to find 5, 6, maybe 7 things that are 15, 20 minute long tasks, maybe a couple tasks that are like an hour long that you can reasonably accomplish in a day and stop at a certain point when you're making the list. Go, that's enough. Or make a long list and be okay with not accomplishing everything on the list. Because you'll still feel good. If you make a list that's 10 to 15 items long and you check off by the end of the day six of those items and the list is almost cut in half, you'll still feel good. You'll still go into the next day going, hey, I still have things on my list left to do. Let me see if I can even cut that one in half today. And then once you get to the end of that stuff, what's the new list? So I totally know what that's like too. So either just stop when it gets to a point where you feel like that's enough things for me to focus on, or be okay with not accomplishing everything on the list. That's also fine. Franklin Curry says, I find on YouTube says, I find a to-do list helps just as a visual aid to determine what things to do in what order, even though I don't really need it, seems to help. Exactly. It's like, yeah, and I knew that I had to do all the things that I did today without the list. I knew the list in my head. That's why I was able to write it down. The list isn't actually necessary for me to intellectually understand what things need to get done, but it feels good to look at it and watch it getting smaller over the day, I think. DeWafflebackers says, also important is to sometimes eat soup. Soup is great, good fuel for list. And I agree. Great feedback, DeWafflebackers. let's see here. G Golly Miss Molly on Instagram says, using the reminders app on iPhones helps me a lot. You can set it to remind you at a date slash time too. So that's one that people always tell me. People are always like, write reminders on your phone. Have your phone remind you. For me, that doesn't work. Now, if that works for you, right on. I love hearing them. Keep them coming. I love hearing the suggestions, but this is what I do. And I have reminders. I set these reminders like 2 years ago and my phone still gives them to me every single day. Like 2 years ago, I set up a schedule for myself from Monday to Friday. Monday was a specific day where I worked on a specific thing. Tuesday was a specific day where I worked on a specific thing, and so on and so forth. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And every single day, I get a reminder from my phone that says, Monday is this day. Tuesday is this day. Wednesday is this day. Every day. And I just, it pops up in my notifications and I just swipe it away. I just go, nope. And I haven't gone into my phone and gotten rid of that notification. It just pops up every day and I just push it away. For whatever reason, the way that my brain works, it's way too easy for me to like ignore. It's the same reason why I need this giant calendar on my wall to look at. Because if I put things in my phone calendar and they pop up on my computer as a notification, I will just click out of them and ignore them 100%. I need it to be looking at me. I need to see it. But if phone notifications work for you, that's great. Use those. K Dragon on Instagram says, when dealing with depression and anxiety, it's often harder to carry out tasks that involve executive functions. We feel overwhelmed. So making to-do lists is like a brain map. It's a great strategy. You know what? Maybe that's more of a psychological analysis of it, of why it works, is that like the executive function of just beginning. Because God, like earlier today, I had a bunch of friends who were texting me with like specific questions saying like, hey, are you available Saturday evening for this? Or, hey, did you see this thing that I sent you that I emailed you? Like people were texting me with like specific questions and I couldn't begin to respond to them. I just was looking at my phone at all these notifications and feeling overwhelmed by it, and making the list helped me. I put that on the list, like respond to the texts. Just so that was one of my things, was like, okay, here we go. And now this section of time of my day is going to be responding to all of these texts. And, you know, the simplicity of just write a response was eluding me because the executive function was eluding me. I'm a wild seed again, says Austin. Are you sure you don't have ADHD? This is literally my life all the time. I don't know when I said I don't have ADHD. Like, from everything I've read about ADHD and heard about it and talking to my therapist about it and her referring me to a psychiatrist who specializes in ADHD and talking to them, it seems like I do. I just don't treat it with any medication, and I'm not, and it's not like a diagnosis that I like lean super hard into or go like for me, I don't know. I didn't have the experience of like learning about that. For a lot of people, a diagnosis is so beneficial because it just gives them a name to something that they're like, oh, that's what that is. It can A, make them feel like they're not alone. Like, oh, there are people who have the same thing, or their brain works in the same way that mine does. And it can B, give them a name to something that has been vexing them. For me, I don't know. I could do an entire episode just on diagnoses and how a diagnosis is just sort of like a word given to a cluster of symptoms, but I've never claimed that I don't have ADHD. I just haven't really like been on the internet being like, I have ADHD, because I made one video about having ADHD, and the ADHD community got really, really mad at me for like, I guess, I don't know. Like it was really wild. There was like a lot of kind of crazy gatekeeping going on that I was like, oh, never mind. I don't really want to be a part of this community. You guys are kind of mean. And, but yeah, I think that my brain does work that way. And when I hear people describe their experience with ADHD, I'm like, yeah, that sounds like my brain. KM Hilliard says, the way you feel about diagnosis is how I also feel about sexuality. I don't feel a need to label it. Yeah, I just heard a song today on TikTok from a comedian who was talking about how if a label is useful for you, absolutely use it. It was a song about like, hey, if that label makes you feel seen or understood in some way, or gives you a context to understand an experience that you're having in some way, absolutely use that label. But if it's not useful for you, you don't need it. And I very much am that way with a lot of things. I feel that way about, like, when people ask me about, like, my political leanings, they're like, wait, so what are you? Are you liberal or are you leftist? Are you a leftist socialist or are you a leftist Marxist? Are you a Marxist communist or are you a communist anarchist? Are you an anarchist anti-fascist? And I'm like, I think I'm some amalgamation of all of those things, and I don't really, it's not useful for me to try to pinpoint it down linguistically. I think I represent my views by stating them out loud in my videos and on my podcast. And I feel that way about sexuality too, where I'm just sort of like, for all intents and purposes, I fall under the category of like heterosexual cisgender man. But when I look at the kind of archetype of heterosexual cisgender man, I find very little there that I actually relate to, and I don't see myself a lot in like the archetype or stereotype of heterosexual cisgender men. And so I'm like, well, I technically fit that description, but I really disagree with and dislike a lot of the behaviors and attitudes and beliefs of the people who dominate that category. So labels for me are a thing that I don't find a lot of use in, but a lot of people who do find use for them, that's great. Absolutely great. Yeah, Offbeat Girl says, nice to have drink a glass of water or stand up and go outside on the list. Totally. You can make the list as simple or complex as you think you're capable of achieving. Give yourself, yeah, some achievable things. And again, drink a glass of water or go outside when executive function is failing you can be difficult. The point is, begin. Try. Do your best. And again, I know that someone telling you, just get out of bed, just go for a run, just eat healthier today, just drink some more water, when you're deep in the depression, can feel so minimizing and dismissive. Believe me, I know. And it can be so frustrating and annoying. So again, I am just relaying my own experience of how I let my depression go on a little bit too long. I indulged it a little bit too long, and I paid the price for it. I wound up behaving in a way that is really unacceptable to me and embarrassing to me. And I had to today find a way to start again. And that's sort of just what I wanted to talk about, is just like finding a way to start again. Hey, we're going to wrap up the podcast here. Instagram, if you want to hang out a little bit longer, I might be singing some songs after we're done. YouTube, if you want to pop over to Instagram, I might be singing some songs over there. If that's something that interests you, I don't know. Hey, everyone, speaking of songs, guess what arrived in the mail today? The test pressings of my double vinyl, of the Beautiful Things double vinyl. It's happening. Finally. I've been trying to make this double vinyl for like 2 years now, and it's finally happening. We had the successful campaign on Bandcamp where everyone funded the pressing of the vinyl. So thank you to everyone who ordered it on that campaign. I have to now, over the next few days, listen to all of these test pressings from start to finish and make sure that the imprint that they're using to press the vinyl is correct and that everything sounds right. I'm about halfway through listening to my first one, and it sounds great so far, which is so exciting and fun. And once I do that, they're going to print them and send them out. So everyone who ordered one, you're going to get yours. And I'm going to have about 150 extras that are going to be for sale on my Bandcamp going forward for anyone who wants one. So stoked about it. Very, very excited to finally be at this point in the process where we're actually getting momentum and the vinyl is getting made. So excited. Thanks everyone for being here. Thank you for your comments and for your kindness and for hopefully granting me a little bit of grace with my story of what a mean bad guy I was last night to that poor sweet movie theater employee. I kind of want to go back and see if I can find that kid and apologize to him. And I think I'm just embarrassed, but I need to maybe overcome that and go do that. So wish me luck with that. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music, also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com, looking up Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music. My double vinyl is going to be available, patreon.com/AustinArcher. You can go support me there. We got a bunch of Patreon patrons over there who I'm just so grateful for and love you guys so much. All right, I think that's it. Okay, that's it. That's all for this week. Next week, I think I'm going to have Brezzy on the show. He's still in town. And I think I'm going to have Niall Breslin, that handsome Irish devil, going to be sitting across from me here in the studio, and you're going to be listening to his beautiful Irish accent, and we're going to be talking about mindfulness, and it's going to be great, and I'll see you there, okay? Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Love you so much. Bye-bye. Making sure you're okay. They'd say whatever you can do to get by, man. At least until tomorrow arrives.